Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm very excited to be joined by two-thirds of the team responsible for the fabulous new book, I Don't Want To, I Don't Feel Like It, How Resistance Controls Your Life and What to Do About It. Hot off the press, in fact, so hot off the press that June, who is the other, the final third of the team putting the book together, has gone to pick up the book to take delivery. So welcome, Sherry and Ashwini.
Thank you. Great to be with you.
So start with congratulations on finishing another amazing book.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
I confess that there were a few copies that have been circulating around just in the last few days, and it's an amazing, amazing book. I can't say enough about it in terms
of... thank you. I just want to explain to people that we have a retreat that starts tomorrow evening.
Yeah.
And so we actually asked the folks who were creating the book for us to do a very special rush job to get us just enough copies of the book so that we could get them to the retreatants in time, which is how you happen to have a copy, right?
Yep. Exactly.
But the rest of them have just arrived. So, yes, as you were.
So, Sherry, what I thought I might start with you. So many times I've heard you talk about a book arriving, not arriving from the press, but when... So you'll talk about you're finishing one book and that life just kind of drops in the next one?
Yes.
And that you're not even necessarily setting out to write a book on a particular topic or even wanting to or like that, but it just kind of drops in.
Yes.
And it's getting
worse.
It's getting worse?
More than one
is dropping in at a time?
Yeah. Well, for a while, I'd finish a book and go, okay, well, that's it, because, you know, I've said everything that...
Right.
I know how to say. But then this person joined our team, this Ashwini person,
uh-huh.
who is a, what is it? It's like a, I don't know, a volcano of creativity. And so she is just constantly in that place where the next thing is dropping in. You'll get to hear from her in just a little bit when I finish talking. But so just today, we were in conference about the workshop we're starting tomorrow evening,
uh-huh.
and there were two books that she mentioned. Both perfect, need to be the next follow-up to this book. And so that's how it happens now.
it channels through Ashwini.
Yes, it used to just drop into my head directly,
uh-huh.
but there was a little slower pace to that.
Uh-huh.
Now they're dropping into my ears,
uh-huh.
and the pace is definitely picking up. So it's pretty exciting.
And so I wonder if you might say a word or two, or Ashwini, about kind of what you see about this particular book arriving at this place in practice for the Sangha.
Yeah, Ashwini. Do you want to speak about that? Because we just had a conversation about it based on what Brian actually said last week. Do you want to take that one?
Sure. I must confess that the idea of the resistance one did drop into Sherry's ears and head directly, not for me.
Uh-huh.
And I think it sort of arose from a conversation that we were having about the sequence of practice steps that we have been taking together at this as Sangha, right? So there's nothing wrong with you is a really powerful place to recognize the system of self-hate that prevents us from taking any step further in practice because we're constantly listening to self-hate and can't get beyond it. So really the spiritual practice doesn't stop until the beating stops.
Uh-huh.
And so that was sort of seminal to go, okay, well, what is the source of the beating? And then I think once we got to that place of identification that the voices exist and that's what's sort of keeping us from moving forward in practice, that the other piece was, the what you practice, the recording and listening practice, because it was such a tremendous focus on, well, if we're not listening to the voices of self-hate, what is available to us from a place of authenticity, and developing the relationship with the mentor was the counterbalance to the work of TINW.
Uh-huh.
And yet, if you had both of those things available to people practicing, then what was it that prevented us from doing what we want to do, which is choosing the life that we want, right? So the logical place that we were looking at is what is missing in our description of this system that keeps us in suffering, that prevents us from taking that last step.
Right.
And so self-hate is one piece of it. We know where to seek the wisdom and the compassionate wisdom. What prevents us from doing that?
Right. Right.
And so that was sort of the conversation around that was the genesis of this book, because after the email class on recording and listening over and over again, what we heard people say is, well, I don't want to record and listen. I know what the benefits are. It's such a powerful experience, and yet people won't pick up the recorder.
Yeah.
And so it was all of that that started the conversation around, well, what is the part of the system that we have not exposed that is the key piece for people to get and practice with that will allow that circle to complete?
So there we are. We're in practice. Okay, we get it. We've done the There Is Nothing Wrong With You work. I get it that the voices of self-hate hate me and don't want my life to work, and that what I need to do as I turn my attention away from that is turn it towards what I do want, which is the what you practice is what you have work. Okay, got that piece. But then why, after we all have that information, is the suffering able to stay in place? Why do we continue to, you almost have to use quote marks, choose not to do that? And so this is that final piece.
Because I don't want to, and I don't feel like it.
Exactly. Yeah.
And the important word there I would pick up on, Jen, is not the why, but the how, which is what the book is about.
Yeah.
Because getting it actually points to the process that we describe in the book, in the sense of, and it's related to the letter that Sherry just sent out to the Sangha, right? That in doing the work of compassionate self-acceptance, once you get introduced to the system of suffering, the ability to disidentify from it allows us to see the system. But until you practice the movement of not just disidentifying from the system, but for closing that loop and being in awareness, you're still looking at the system in the way the system has trained you to look at everything. Right? And so really, you feel like you've disidentified, but you are not. You don't own that. You're in the place of awareness from which you can disidentify. So practice becomes just conditioning, looking at conditioning, not awareness attending to awareness. So the focus of attention is not on compassionate self-acceptance or on beauty and love and everything else that we have when we're with the mentor. It continues to look at the system, right, which is self-hating. And so being able to bring the attention to the third place to look, which is awareness itself, then everything transforms.
We hope,
yeah.
I mean, it's possible, but what in that conversation I referred to earlier, what was said was what's being done in practice is all of the entrances and exits being cut off from egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate. So it's systematically moving through. So, you know, as Ashwini just laid out, you know, there's the whole self-hate piece, and then we cut that off. But then it slides around and comes in another door. So now, now you can work with the mentor. Then it oozes over and it comes in, slides under another door. And so we cut that one off with transcending resistance. And who knows where it's going to ooze and slide in next.
And, you know, as you say that, Sherry, what occurs to me is that it's like bringing the whole Sangha into the process that you're doing, you, Ashwini, June, writing the books, which is that.
Yes.
Do you know, because then we all start to go, okay, so it is going to ooze, it is going to go out, it's going to find another entrance, but we're not looking at the content of those entrances. We now all see that's going to happen. Okay, what's the next one going to be, and how are we going to work with that one?
Yes, exactly. And in fact, just this afternoon in a conversation with Ashwini, she said, we were talking about this next book possibility, and I said, okay, so when can we do an email class? Because you might have noticed the schedule is a little bit full. And she said, well, if we could make it the one in October. And I said, ooh, that's a long ways away. And she said, well, we could work on the book till then. And I said, oh, no, no. We cannot write a book without an email class, because an email class is Sangha, right? So we lay out the theory. If you think about the last few books,
yeah.
There's the theory of it.
Yeah.
But I mean, now when I was doing this on pretty much on my own, you know, with June, with the editing and the designing and all that, but I'm doing the content of everything. I can't just take it out of whole cloth,
right,
and present something. I need to know, well, where are people in the Sangha? What are you seeing? What are you doing? How are you approaching that?
Yeah.
And so we lay it out, which was, I thought, done. Ashwini actually did it, so I can say it's done beautifully in this last email class series in the book.
Uh-huh.
So it's then people are saying what they're looking at and where they're stuck and where the openings are. And then it's easy to write a book that speaks to all of those issues.
Yeah. It really paints for you. Okay, basically what the Sangha does is outline what is conditioning up to. How does it do this issue?
Yeah, what do we need next?
Yeah.
Where do we need to go next? So it's kind of,
starting for me. Just to outline that, Jen, I know people who open the book, right? There's a series of exchanges between the guide and the student.
The stage, it's beautifully done, yeah.
And so that a lot of the questions that the student is asking are questions that we've heard over and over again around resistance.
Yes.
How is fear resistance? How is anxiety? I have, you know, conditioning does this to me, conditioning does that to me. And what we're looking at is distilling the hypothesis in the book that ego identity is always trying to maintain itself and it resists anything that threatens its existence, and that's what we experience is resistance to anything. It's ego identity maintenance.
Yeah.
If you look at that as the model, if you will, you can parse pretty much anything like fear or procrastination or hope or weight loss, anything, piece of content, and that's what the book attempts to do, right? So present the model and then use what people are experiencing in terms of these are the ways resistance manifests for me as a discussion between the guide and a guide and a student to explain how to look at that.
Yes. And it's really, that's one of my favorite parts of the book are those exchanges, and the way that I've been using it is, you know, I'm that student. And I'm asked the question, and then I go away, and I look at that for myself, and then I come back and read the next part.
Good for you, Jen. That's what makes you a good student, okay? Because what we hope won't happen, so I just want to underline that, what we hope won't happen is that people just race through it like it's a novel. Because that's not, you don't get to the end of practice and get the answer, find out how it turned out. How it turned out is you're still as stuck as you were in the beginning. So if you do it in that way, so there the question is posed, and I say, all right, well, I'm the student, so let me answer the question and then see what the sage responds to me next.
Yeah, exactly.
This is the way to do it.
Yeah, and I also want to say, I know that, Sherry, every book you've written is essentially about how, you know, how we do anything is how we do everything. It's not what, it's how. It's all about that, and I will say that I feel like this book takes that to a deeper level, that I really, in my own practice, already in these few days since reading it, I'm really, really seeing a clearer path into looking from how. So I really appreciate that element from all of
great.
Us about that. Very grateful.
That's great. Great. Good.
I guess we have a radio show, or you have a radio show to have anyway. So
yes. So now...
Yeah.
Well, only one quick thing, not necessarily about that, but I understand you're gonna interview the third part of what we call Team Us, and that is June, who's, as you said, off picking up the books, and and I hope she'll talk with people a little bit about how we did this.
Yes, because
it's a fun process, and I think you can tell from looking at the book the difference in this book from from other books that we've done. And by the way, I do want to say before you go, one of our projects that that we're talking about is going back and actually redoing the older books in more in this style. And I'm hoping that, you know, they kind of get updated in the sense that more from the perspective that Sangha is practicing now without losing the beginner's mind. You know, we go step by step by step by step, but making them a little more interactive and interesting in that way.
That's really fun. Really fun. Great. Well, thank you to the both of you and also June in her absence for the amazing, beautiful work you're doing for, on behalf of the entire Sangha.
Thank you, Jen.
All right. Good night, Ashwini. And Sherry and Michael, we'll turn the show over to you.
Okay, great. Thank you. Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Wow. That was a fun way to start the show.
Yeah, I thought so, but, you know.
Well, I have to confess, too, I have seen the book myself because someone close to me is going on retreat, and so with you tomorrow.
So I've had a look at it, too,
and it's pretty awesome.
It's pretty darn cute, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, one of the things I hope June will talk about is the fact that it's so much more generously illustrated than books in the past have been, and such a variety of illustrations that I personally think the illustrations and exercises and that sort of thing are really helpful because, you know, we can take things in from different ways than just reading words and having them run through conditioned mind. So I think it's a fun book, and it's a deep book. And I think it's visually delightful, personally.
Yeah.
Having had very little to do with that aspect of it, I can say that.
Yeah, and I don't want to give anything away. And I love the exercises in the back of the book as well.
In fact, I just heard a rumor that one of the monks has already started through that series of exercises, so he's going to be ahead of everybody else on that, and I'm really eager to hear from him how that's going. So, yeah.
Great. Woo! And I have a few announcements.
All right.
The There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat will be offered May 4th through 11th at the monastery. This is our classic 8-day retreat offered in the beauty of nature. It's a great retreat to repeat again and again. And at the retreat, participants gain a clearer perspective on how they live their lives and on how to find compassion for themselves and others. That word how is coming up a lot tonight, Sherry, I've noticed.
It is. It seems to be a big part of what we do, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yes.
You know what's interesting about that, Michael, is that it is. It is our practice. And because we're so familiar with that, we forget that it is not a familiar concept in the world, that it's really quite baffling to people that people would look at life from a process perspective rather than a content perspective. It's extremely unusual. And I really don't want us ever to forget how unusual it is and how difficult it is for people, because if we do forget that, then we lose our sensitivity to how confusing things can seem, making that transition from the content of life to the process of life.
Yes. Hmm? For me, it's so relaxing and simplifying. Look at the process rather than having to learn something about each particular content, which is what conditioned mind is trying to do unsuccessfully.
In Buddhism, you know,
They always talk about the 10,000 because that, you know, that just signals you that, ooh, they mean a lot here.
Yeah.
And that's it. You know, the 10,000 bits of content that we're supposed to sort through and organize and learn about and get to the other side and figure out so that we can get past it. And, you know, that 10,000 turns into one when we focus on the process.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so it is,
yeah.
It is relaxing.
Yeah, like,
yeah.
Be kind. You know,
that's
enough
precisely.
For a lifetime. Yeah.
That's enough for a lifetime, and it solves every problem. It's plenty of focus, and it nullifies every difficulty.
Yes, yes. Wonderful.
Yeah.
The,
what else is going on?
The Rest and Be Thankful retreat returns May 17th through 19th at the monastery. It's a shorter weekend retreat, and it includes walks in nature, art and yoga workshops, periods of meditation, and simple, delicious meals to allow your heart to open to the generosity of life.
Mm-hmm.
You can learn all about this and more at schedule.livingcompassion.org. And I'd like to remind our callers to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes. So let's get started.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
First caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, hi. This is Pasha. Can you hear me?
Yes, Pasha. It does sound like you're in a windstorm, though.
Okay.
That's better. I don't know what you did, but it helped.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, how are you?
Excellent, excellent. Speaking of retreats, rumor has it that you just finished one.
Yes.
You have that post-retreat giggle.
Yes, I'm in a transition of from There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat, and it's amazing. I mean, it was such a great place to go again after I haven't been there for several years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very refreshing. It's renewing, and I've seen so many things that. It seems to be, it seems like it was slipping away from me, before, and just, just the energy, rejuvenating, after the retreat, it's great.
So Parker, I just want to clarify something for people who, so you said after several years, so you did the There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat several years ago. You've been back to the monastery many times since then. And then this past week, you repeated that long ago retreat of There's Nothing Wrong With You. And so doing something again that you did before and realizing, let me project here, how much you've changed and how many things that might have been very solid as a result of that original retreat had kind of slipped away a little bit, and it was good to get a booster shot and remember those, recall those original kinds of awarenesses.
I would add not only the booster shot, but also several things kind of conditioned mind got into, like, oh, well, I understand, I understand projection. And look, they're projecting this, they're projecting that, and they're projecting, other things. So, and then like, oh, well, I'm projecting that they're projecting. So, that was...
yeah. Oh, that's different, isn't it?
So, I'm in a place of finding how... several tools kind of slip away into conditioned mind and reclaiming them back, and also finding the things kind of a deeper understanding, like what is it and how is it happening in everyday life. And I feel like I'm I'm wrapped from all the sides into practice tools, and my recorder only like a hand away, so it's always with me, and I'm inside assurances all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
And that feels like well, what image just dropped in was like being maybe like an image of like a Russian dolls, you know, being a smallest doll inside the one slightly bigger, and
mm-hmm.
just being cuddled, being held, being embraced by somebody who is slightly bigger,
mm-hmm.
and then that slightly bigger is embraced by somebody who is on the way to a yoga class right now.
Uh-huh.
And
and to me the importance for us all of what you're saying is I have a direct experience of something, and over
mm-hmm.
time, even though I am practicing, that direct experience turns into kind of an understanding or a
yes.
theory or a
yep.
story.
And yep.
it and I think I still have it, but I don't, because I've lost the
yep.
direct experience. Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to keep going to that direct experience. That's where I want to live. Not in a yeah, I know that, but in a yeah, I'm having that experience right now.
Oh yes. Yeah. The conditioned mind would say, oh, you know that there is nothing wrong with you. You've been there, you know, like, you know, but just, yeah, that direct experience is so much bigger than any understanding. It's just, yeah.
No comparison.
No comparison. It's very hard to describe and categorize and put in some kind of a shape or form. It just... yeah, it's huge.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, it is.
Yeah. Thank you so much,
good.
And I'm very excited about the new book. I had a slight voice of like resisting or to getting the book, but all I know, I just have to go through that resistance, and then all other resistances, their days will be numbered.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly so. All right. Well,
all right. Thank you so much.
Enjoy your class, and we'll talk to you soon, huh?
All right. Thank you.
Right.
Thank you, Michael.
Thanks,
Pasha. Have a good night.
Good night.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Pasha. You're listening to Open Air.
That was funny, isn't it? To think about, I have some resistance to trying that book. Oh well, there it is.
Yeah. Exactly.
We don't have to look far to find resistance.
No, we don't. That's for sure. And we have another caller here.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. This is Carol from Quebec. Hope you're well.
Hello, Carol. My goodness, you sound like you are right next door. That's amazing. Great connection.
Aha.
Uh-huh. Aha.
Yeah, I feel right next door. I feel I'm feeling a little queasy with it was a bit hard getting to the call, and but I'm here and
do you mean there might have been a little resistance?
Yes, and in all kinds of very interesting ways too. It's been a really interesting time, and I'm calling because I need guidance, and mm-hmm. just for me to say that is a step.
Uh-huh. Oh, good. Because, again, that R word would be there right between you and a request for support.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how process, let me just go out with it. So some time ago I wrote to the monastery to see about coming for, as a visiting monk for a month, and there'd been quite a bit of resistance around that and around asking for that. And I got a response which kind of woke me up. And the response was, yes, and remember that this the schedule is demanding and can be the vigorous activity, and does that meet your physical needs?
Mm-hmm.
And when I got that mail, it was like a wake-up call, because what I saw is that the way that I had, how I had done this process of just asking to go, I hadn't really checked in with and looked at what that would be, because I do have continuing health problems that I deal with pretty well, but that are ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started to work with the mentor to look at that and to work with the different parts of me and to see and it's been interesting what the mentor has been telling me. One was, first thing was around the process that I was doing it, and that I saw that I had just written in with sort of not considering the whole being in that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm. The mind wrote in and forgot that there was a body who was going to be a real big participant in this endeavor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And how that's a process of just charging forward, which is without regard for the consequences to the being.
Yes, and yes. Well, and Carol, if I may, right there, because this whole conversation we've been having, that's a perfect example of conditioned mind, ego, wants something. Now, whether that's a legitimate want or whether it's what I often suspect it is, just another way to stick it to the human being, right? So the ego says, oh, I want to do that. I want to do that. And it's not a, it resonates because your heart wants to do that too, right?
Yes.
But the heart would have a very different approach. So ego says, oh, yeah, I want to do that. I'll write the letter. And there's no consideration of the human being in that, right? So the ego identity is off doing its maintenance routine, which is, in this case, just do something, rush out there, set her up for something that probably won't work, especially because it's being set up in this way, then blame her when it doesn't, then blame everybody else when it doesn't. Right, because that's what ego
uh-huh.
likes to do, make the whole thing into a failure, and there, then it can, you know, you can just kind of see ego over there, kind of brushing its hands together, job well done.
And ultimately, after such an experience and that kind of result, saying, well, giving up on practice.
That's right. Well, see, you can't do it. You see, you can't do it. It's just not for you. And what it doesn't want us to see is, if it hadn't been done that way, it probably would have worked. And it would have actually been very beneficial to me.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But that's what we're meant not to see.
That's what we're meant not to see.
Yeah. So it happens over and over and over. So I'm going to, you know, I have stomach problems.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to go out with friends. And, you know, there are certain things that I can eat and certain things that I can't eat. And so when I'm getting ready to go out, there's some level of awareness that this is the case and that I want to take care of myself because I want to be healthy and I want to enjoy the evening and I want to, you know, all of these things. And then unconsciousness happens. And ego identity, which, remember, has its imaginary existence outside of life, right? Just uses this form as its vehicle to get around and do its nefarious little work. And so unconsciousness sets in. I order a bunch of stuff to eat that isn't good for me. I drink a bunch of stuff that's not good for me. And then when I get sick, which I was bound to do, what I hear is, you see, you can't do those things. Look at what you did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Basically, it's my fault now
And the only fault that's there, if there were such a thing, is I listened to those voices and I went unconscious.
Yeah.
That's it. I didn't even eat the food.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Yeah.
Yeah. And what I'm seeing is that it creates a rupture of confidence with the being.
Yes.
I can no longer trust.
That's right.
I can no longer trust that. And yeah.
That's right. And not only can you not trust yourself, even though you were not a part of any of it, right? Because you weren't even there, right?
Yeah.
So when I'm unconscious, I'm not there. I'm not making those decisions about that food and that drink, and I'm not. When I come to being blamed for what's happened, and I'm told that I can't be trusted. Not even that I can't trust myself, but I can't be trusted. And so where am I supposed to then look to the authority who can be trusted to do the right thing? Why, the very voice in my head that talked me into going unconscious and doing all that in the first place.
That's where I'm stuck. That's where I've been. That's where I've been.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's where you were.
Yeah.
You're not there anymore.
No.
Yep.
No. Yeah.
And you know, Carol, the thing about it is, this is another thing we're never meant to get. So we're told and we're taught, God, from, you know, first tottering around, that we're not supposed to learn anything. So if you have an experience like this, it's proof that there's something wrong with you.
Mm.
Right? But how are we going to realize what unconsciousness is? And how we get talked into going unconscious, and what we do when we're unconscious, and what ego is, and how it does what it does to us, and how it steals our life force. If we didn't take these steps, we could not wake up.
And so not to look where it's pointing and saying, this is wrong and you can't trust yourself, and
nope.
To shift,
say,
to look at
this is proof,
how
this is proof. That's right. This is proof that you can trust yourself. Because you're the one who's seeing it.
Yeah.
You're the one having this conversation.
Yes. Hmm? That's right. And the process that brought me today to get to this point where I'm talking with you is proof of that.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the next piece of it is humility.
Humility?
Yeah. If we really, really could get that what I want to do is wake up and save this poor, suffering human being, then every time I got schnookered, I would say, "Darn, it got me again. I can't believe it. But somehow it put me to sleep again, and here I am." In fact, what it tries to do is make us feel bad, so we'll hide the fact that it's doing what it's doing to us.
We'll go to sleep, and then we wake up. We have this story about what happened, and that's what we believe. Yeah.
And it's embarrassing, and so you want to hide it. You don't want anybody to know. Right? But what we ought to be doing is saying, just screaming it from the rooftops, "This, it did it to me again. And this is how it did it. And I was right there, right up until the moment when," and then I went unconscious. I don't know what happened after that. That makes life exciting, and that's fun. And everybody in Sangha can get right there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, all right. Well, the last time I saw you, you were getting ready to step off the end of that pier. I think that was the moment that you... Yeah.
The last time I saw you when I was still here before leaving.
That's right. That's right. And then, I don't know what happened after that. Blackout. And if we did that, we would close in on this stuff so quickly. But it trains us to feel bad. It trains us to hide it, to protect it, because we feel bad that it did that to us. Yeah? So, I mean, this, you know, this gets acted out in a lot of ways that aren't just psychological. So battered women, for instance, are a perfect example. They are ashamed that they get beaten, and so they hide the fact that they're being beaten because they believe it's their fault. Children who are abused are frightened and ashamed, and they hide the fact that they're being abused, and they protect the abuser. The same exact process that all conditioned human beings are caught in. It's internal. I'll tell you, the results are just as visible. You can certainly tell when somebody's being battered. Right? The bruises might not be on the outside of the body, but when you're around somebody who's living in a world of self-hate, the wounds are certainly apparent.
Yeah, you can see the wounded spirit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I'm glad we had this conversation.
Well, thank you very much, and I guess I'm just going to continue on and continue looking at that in that spirit of
That's
mind.
Right, and at some point, perhaps write a different letter.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, one that takes yeah. everybody into account.
That's a very
yeah. Well, because when we're asking about possibilities are endless. But only from center, from the heart, can we talk in terms of possibilities.
Deep kasho to you.
Thank you. You too.
And good night.
Take good care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Carol. You're listening to Open Air. Sherry, we're going to hear from our sponsor, and then we'll be right back.
Okay.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful heart?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart. And one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air. And we have another caller, Sherry.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, hello. This is Emily calling from Oakland.
Oh, hello, Emily.
Hello.
What's going on?
I am calling to express how incredibly grateful for the practice I am.
Well, I know how you feel. Can you say more about that?
I got a fairly large chunk of content dropped on me about a week and a half ago, work-related. And I think that if this had happened 5 years ago before I encountered your books and started doing the practice, I would still be in bed with the covers over my head.
Mm.
And instead, I've been... resisting is not the right word. I have been declining to listen to the voices that are telling me that I need to look ahead and strategize and worry and plan.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just focusing on here's where I am. And I'm going to do what's right here, what's right now, and the people that I'm with right now.
Mm-hmm.
And by working on staying there, I find that I've moved through the fear, the anticipation, it's dissolved in a way that I don't think it would have in the past.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And now I'm having moments of excitement and possibility and seeing opportunities. And it's
uh-huh.
So it's wonderful. It's great.
Yeah. So instead of something happens, and if we listen to conditioning, we just shut down, clamp down, and go into a story, right? Follow it right into a story of gloom and doom and horror and misery. With practice, we just keep on breathing, and remind ourselves, these are the kinds of times we practice for. We keep on breathing. We remind ourselves, I don't know what's going to happen. I've never known what's going to happen, but I'm quite certain that I'm here with me right now, and that's my commitment to stay here. And so I'm just going to keep breathing and being present here. And you just open and expand and open and expand and open and expand, and all kinds of possibilities come through your door.
And I'm so grateful.
I know what you mean. I know exactly what you mean. It's, you know, I just use this word a lot because it's my experience. It's miraculous, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
In a world where everything is supposed to result in suffering, to know that that's not necessary, and in fact there's an alternative, is nothing short of a miracle.
Thank you so much, and thank you, Michael, for being here to bring the show every week. It's an immense help.
And thank you for bringing us the good news.
Gotcha.
All right, good night.
Thanks for joining us, Emily. You're listening to Open Air. Gratitude is the doorway, isn't it, Sherry?
It is. It is. It's one of those, it sounds like New Age oogum boogum, but it's actually just how life works. The more grateful we are, the more abundance there is, you know?
Yeah.
And I have to actually say a little bit more about that, because it's going to sound like I'm talking about manifesting, which I'm not, because focusing on trying to get more closes the portal. But being grateful for what we have and focusing on that opens that portal. And so then there's just more and more there for us to be grateful for. And in the kinds of situations that Carol and Emily have been pointing us toward this evening, you know, these are not good news moments. You know, life is not offering us necessarily the winning ticket to the lottery. These are things that we are conditioned to believe are bad things, terrible things, things that we want to avoid. And yet with the attitude of mind that says, this too is a gift for me, then the heart opens and there's the receiving, and that's the source of our gratitude, right there, the open-hearted receiving of whatever life brings us, whatever life offers us. Then it doesn't matter what life offers us, because we are in that place of open-hearted, grateful receiving. All good.
Amen.
Amen.
Amen. Amen. Mm-hmm. Sherry, we're going to break for an important message here, and then we'll be right back.
Oh.
The year of deepening practice has produced a new support opportunity for people of all levels of practice. A team of Zen awareness coaches guided by Sherry Huber, who offer individual coaching to support awareness practice. This coaching program is designed to help strengthen the inner voice of self-compassion and peace, and places a special emphasis on recording and listening. Whether you're brand new or a long timer, awareness coaching can be the extra support your heart desires. As the Buddha said, we must each work out our own salvation diligently. Zen awareness coaches can assist you wherever you are in your practice. For more information, visit sanghamarket.com. Look for the Little Zen Monk under the services section. These services are offered with loving kindness to support those wishing to deepen their practice.
Welcome back to Open Air. And we have another caller, Sherry.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. This is Beth.
Hey, did you get that fire put out?
It was really wild just seeing, like, flames coming out from my neighbor's house.
Yes, I can only imagine.
You hear about things, but, you know, it's nothing like it is on TV.
I'm quite serious. Did they get it put out? Is everybody okay?
Well, the thunderstorm really helped. It was raining intensely.
Uh-huh.
So by the time the fire department got there, but, you know, after I saw people gathering, I kind of left the drama.
Uh-huh. You figured it.
After
there were enough people in the drama, they didn't need your support.
Yeah, the call was made, and I have, yeah. Yeah, and I've gone
good.
Back, yeah, so things were kind of contained pretty quickly.
Good.
Yeah.
And so how about you?
Okay, well, looking at impermanence,
mm-hmm.
you know, kind of how living with the illusion of safety and how my whole, you know, that's one of my traps that I continually fall into. Am I safe?
Mm-hmm. And let me ask you this, Beth. Do you ever ask, what is safe? I really
yeah.
am curious because,
yeah,
you
actually,
know, what does that mean?
One of my favorite Mutz cartoons is the cats underneath the covers and saying, boy, you know, I'm really safe, but I'm also suffocating.
Uh-huh.
And it's kind of, yeah, and there's no, it's not interested in showing up, going deeper. The shallow end is fine.
Uh-huh. Here on the bottom of the shallow end.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I carried around with me the quote that's hanging, or as I remember, hanging in the dining hall, Dag Hammarskjöld.
Mm-hmm.
And finding people that will help you risk.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
To find the part that's not going anywhere.
Yeah, and so... safe, it sounds like you're pretty dialed in that safe means ego is safe from life.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And has the understanding that life in life, you know, like the full range of human emotions are terrifying.
For ego.
Yeah.
Yeah, everything is
yeah.
terrifying for ego. Everything real is terrifying for ego.
Yes.
Uh-huh. So if we go back to the cat image, that ego world of safety, that suffocating world of safety is the size of a little lump under a blanket.
Ha. Yes.
Mm-hmm. But ego feels safe there in that it's able to control the life force of a human being not to ever do anything that makes it feel unsafe.
Yes.
Yeah. So this new book, Beth, was written actually for you because what it's going to help you see is that's not you.
That's not me.
That's not you. That's ego. It's very different from you. Yeah.
Yes.
So if we, you know, again, that cat, right? What is a cat? What is a cat? What is a cat's, you know, dharma, if you will?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what if a cat? What does a cat do? A cat prowls and sneaks around and looks for things and sleeps
and waits.
In the sun and waits and is curious and fascinated and jumps off of things and, you know, okay, it's got a whole life, right?
Yeah.
Now, that includes maybe if it's city life, getting hit by a car or getting some
yeah.
disease or something. That's all part of the cat's life, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And so if we get attached to the ego gets attached to the cat, then what the ego wants to do is take the cat's claws out and
because
we're also attached to our furniture, right? So take the claws out of the cat and never let the cat go outside.
Yeah.
Right? But it's not a cat any longer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they tend to get overweight and heart disease and
that's right. And neither is a human any longer a human when it's in the grip of ego. It's just a service station. It's a line that goes from the human being to ego through which the ego is able to siphon off the life force of the human being. The human being isn't a human being any longer because a human being goes and does and plays and acts and is excited and adventuresome and
yes. And there's no use waiting for tomorrow.
No use waiting what?
No use waiting for tomorrow.
No, there's no such thing.
There's no such thing.
Yeah, so no, that would not be good to wait for that.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. No. And, of course, ego, you know, sets up all of these ideas because it wants to be safe. So you should focus your whole life on dying. Right, so you need to make sure you have the right amount of health insurance and the right burial plan, in fact. you know, we can pass right over retirement.
Right.
And everything is tomorrow when out there in the future, some imaginary future, on my way death, I'll be all right.
Yeah, disabled and death. Yeah. Yeah. That's, there's a definite lure trap there.
Yes, because people think egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate is who they are. So when the voice in the head says, I don't want to, I don't feel like it, I'm afraid, but what's going to happen if, no, don't go out there. No, don't do that. That's crazy. Don't, you know, something bad is going to happen to you if you do that. People think it's them talking, thinking, but it's not.
I'm not alone in my own head.
No.
It's not my head.
Your head. It's been taken over a long time ago. You're not welcome there. You're not welcome there.
Yes. It's funny that I first started seeing that I had safety issues about 15 years ago. And I think I'm finally ready and seeing like a deeper level of it. There's like an awareness that I'm doing it, but I'm still doing it.
That's right. That's right. And so you need to sign up for the retreat. It's going to be in your neighborhood in September, Transcending Resistance. And we will assist you in seeing that being focused on the conversation, in this case, of safety. So there's a conversation constantly going on, reinforcing these, in quotes, my fingers are making the little safety issues, is nothing more than ego looking at the situation through a slightly different lens.
Yes.
Right? So now ego is looking at ego having safety issues. Yeah, so at first, ego just had safety issues, and you went along with that. Yeah, I have safety issues. Okay, then you begin to catch on. Wait a minute. I have these issues that seem to be stopping me from having a life.
Oops. Yes.
She's starting to catch on to this. So let's look at it from this perspective. Let's have her watch how ego does safety issues. Okay, so the focus is still on ego. Still on safety issues, no forward motion.
It seems when there's no worry about safety. There's curiosity.
That's right. So when you came into this world a while back, there was no concern about safety whatsoever. You had to be deeply traumatized to get on board with the notion that you should care about safety.
Now that
orientation to life is alive and well in you.
It's
available right now. All the adventure, all the excitement, all the fun, all the learning, all the seeing, all the going, it's right there available to you in this moment. But you have to drop that conversation with ego about anything. Okay, so safety is just the one, it's the easy one.
Yep.
Okay, you drop that conversation, it's going to have another one for you.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Sometimes just a little shiver different so that, you know, I think it's fresh.
Yeah. Yeah. So here's the thing. You're going to die.
Yep.
And so you can die.
Before that,
to be
I'm
safe.
Gonna get sick
trying
and
to be
I'm
safe.
Gonna be able to get myself.
Yeah.
Yep.
Or you can die with a big old grin on your face. Having fun.
Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, right now I'm got two legs and two arms and I, you know.
And a head that
I can hear the birds. I can.
We don't know who.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so get out and enjoy them, right? And reclaim that head. Because that
You're in
head.
Humble submission.
Yeah, that head is where life is attempting to reach you. That head and that heart are your direct contact with life, right? So you want to declutter, and open up the passage so that life can invite you in. All right.
Leaving me with thank you.
Thank you. Take good care of yourself. Stay out of fires.
All right.
Bye.
Thank you, Carrie.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Beth. You're listening to Open Air. Sure, that conversation reminds me of a favorite quote of yours. Safety, security, and knowing are all synonyms for death. Live to be
present. Ooh. Yeah. It's true, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, because the only time we're, well, of course, we don't even know that, right? We don't even know that we're actually safe as soon as we die. We could be in more trouble than we've even imagined. So we might as well let it all go now, huh?
Yes, indeed. And we have another caller here.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. Virginia.
Hey, Virginia.
Hey. Hi.
What are you up to?
Well, you know, it's funny. I'm actually coming on retreat tomorrow.
I was going to say, I thought I just heard a rumor that such and such a place Virginia was going to be in. I thought that might be you.
Yeah, it's me. And I'm very happy to be on the call. I've heard other people call the evenings before they go on retreat, you know, and talk a little. And for me, it's always, you know, there's always... how can I say it? The conditioned conversation has always been for me. Oh, you know, you don't have time. You know, you have to do all this stuff before you can get ready to go. And da 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 da. And tonight, I just said, I don't know. I heard it tonight, and I said, you know, I think as I prepare to, you know, my stuff and get ready, I think I'd rather listen to the radio show and maybe talk on the radio show, and then it'll be an easier.
Yeah.
It'll change my experience of getting ready.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. So I can either be in a conversation with conditioning about what I have to do and try to it tries to get me into urgency and what's wrong and then slide over into fear and, you know, what's the retreat and you're going to... Or I could just get with Sangha and remember exactly why I'm going on that retreat,
right,
and that it doesn't actually matter about any of it.
Right.
And I'll probably have everything I need when I get there, and if I don't, I'll ask and somebody will find it for me. So there, let's just relax and go on retreat.
Exactly. It's just so different for me, Sherry. I can't tell you. The whole thing about getting ready and to go places and stuff has always been a big content area for me. So this is great. This is marvelous. And and I do have something I also wanted to talk about a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Something we talked about probably a year ago. It has to do with doing things because I think I'm being told it's the right thing to do. Like having a whole set of beliefs around right and wrong and the right person thing to do and the nice person thing to do versus, I guess what I'm coming to see is kind of a roundabout way. I'm starting to see that there are different behaviors I can do in life, and then I will have different experiences depending on behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And none of it is, you know, the behaviors aren't right or wrong, and it's just going to give me a different experience.
Yes, and you know what I just saw when you said that, Virginia, is when we were little kids, it would have been so wonderful if we're going around, because nobody tells little kids anything except as soon as you do something wrong and everybody starts yelling at you. But, you know, for a long time, at least for me, maybe I was just a slow little kid, but I really wasn't sure why they were yelling at me or exactly what it was that I did wrong. And knowing that I did that thing wrong did not inform me at all about how I should have done it right. Yeah.
Right.
So to have somebody there who you know, you're going to do something, you say, well, you know, I've always done it this way, so I think I would like to do it that way. And then that person who's, you know, older, wiser, would say, well, sure. And, you know, you might watch for this and that and see what happens with this. And then you could go and you could, you know, we could have had all kinds of life experiences and not have been traumatized.
Right.
So that didn't happen for us then, but it can happen now because we have the mentor.
Right. Well, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I guess for me, just seeing, I don't know, dismantling the belief that there are, that's, certain behaviors are better than others.
Yeah,
feels like it's actually turned my whole system upside down.
Yes,
because yes,
what
had been, yeah, because what had been in place has been, I had in place all these beliefs, and then I acted on, you know, I acted like, you know, I have this in this area, you know, these are the right things to do. And if I do these right things, then I'll get this certain result. And if I in this other area, if I do these right things, there will be this other result. But that doesn't mean I always did the right things. It just made a system that in which conditioned mind could beat me up if I failed. And
yes. And
anyhow,
if things didn't go the way it said they would go, it was your fault.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's just a constant proof that there's something wrong with you.
Right. Exactly.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Exactly. And anyway, I think that's kind of what's starting to open up. Feels like what's opening up is this thing now. Then I sometimes will find myself going to do an automatic behavior, and then it'll be like, oh, I don't really want to do that. I mean,
yeah.
Kind of catching it because it kind of brings into question the whole idea of what am I, you know, what would I love to do? What would I like to do? What would I love to do?
Yeah, what would light me up?
What would light me up?
It reminds me of a conversation we had recently about communication, you know, where what if nobody ever told you anything?
Right.
You know, what would it look like? And so
right.
I, you know, I'm pretty heavily conditioned like most human beings. And I recall being in a foreign country, an unnamed foreign country, and I was waiting to get on a streetcar. Kind of a, you know, an open bus public transportation thing. And so I approached it like the good, well-trained American. And I mean, I was nearly trampled in the rush. You know, people who were 15 people behind me got on, and I'm still standing there. And I got it that it might not be that all these people are rude. No, it's just that's how they do it here. It doesn't mean the same thing. It means, but yeah. And so to
to begin to explore those kinds of things. You know, what if it's all just made up? And so for me, you know, kind of a rule of thumb with that is, well, is anybody likely to get hurt in this? So at first, you know, just start with that.
Right.
And if it's one of those where, no, I don't think so, so there I am. Don't tell anybody I said this, okay? I'm out on some country road at a four-way stop, okay? I can see for miles in every direction. There's nobody coming. I'm going to go through that red light, okay? I don't think it makes me a bad person.
Right, yeah, yeah.
But for years, I was sat right there and waited.
Right, right. Oh, you would have. Oh, that's interesting, yeah. Yeah, and you know what, Sherry, that's interesting because I don't know, you just kind of reminded me, it's sort of like not having a right or wrong or good or bad way to be. It sort of also takes the pressure, it kind of removes the lid off the pressure cooker of sometimes of having a compulsion or feeling, you know, seems like under a lot of restriction, then there's the desire to do the opposite.
Right. So we could just go for what seems intelligent.
Right. Yeah.
You know, let that inform you for a while. And,
right.
And then and you'll see a ton.
Yeah.
A ton. And then you'll start seeing where conditioning comes in again and tries to make that. But what you're really closing in on is being in the moment, being present and letting life inform you, instead of being controlled by conditioned mind. And that is worth any risk. Having that experience is worth risking everything.
Thank you. Actually, you said, you just nailed it for me, Sherry. I feel like, that's it. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what I'm trying to, like, dribble out here is that's kind of what it feels like.
I'm going to trust life. I'm going to trust life to inform me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm going to trust life. If there's a mistake, well, I prefer to call it a learning opportunity.
Right, right. And if I don't have a belief about what's right and what's wrong, what would make me a good person or a bad person, then you're standing there, I'm standing here in the moment, it's like all kinds of options are open, right?
Yes, precisely. And it's fun.
It's fun, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh,
and
cool.
being controlled by conditioning is not fun. There. And again, moving from one point to the other, it's worth everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. All right, we'll see you tomorrow night.
Yeah, sounds great. Thank you very much, Sherry. Thank you, Michael.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Virginia. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Another blessing for us tonight, Sherry.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. It's good, huh? It's fun.
Yeah, lively. It was great. I enjoyed it.
Me too. Well, I wish I were going to see you tomorrow night, but I know I'll be seeing people close to you. So enjoy that too. And then before long, hopefully, get to see you on one of these retreats.
Yes. Looking forward to it.
All right.
Thank you,
Michael.
Sherry.
Good night.
Good night.